Hey, Swabbies. Thanks for tuning into the Smelly Pirate Content Creation Show. Case studies offer the marketplace proof your product or service is valuable to your target customers. Well, I guess these pirates are both crazy and smelly because we're giving away a case study for free. And from what I understand, free is a very good price. For a limited time, purchase one case study from Lion's Way and you'll get a second one free. Just fill out the contact form and use the word pungent when one of the crew reaches out. BOGO Case Studies. It's a world gone mad. Gar.
Lion's Way presents the Smelly Pirate Content Creation Show. Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, one of your hosts and moderator, Eric Arneson, a writer for Lion's Way Content. With me today is the creative director of Lion's Way Content, Joel Barker. Say hi, Joel.
Howdy.
And lead writer and partner, Carl Steiner. Hi, Carl.
Hi, Eric. How are you today?
I'm good.
Excellent.
We today are going to talk about a type of content called a case study. We're going to talk about what a case study is, how it can serve a business, and how one is created, and some other cool stuff. So to start everything off, Carl, Joel, please talk over each other and tell me, what is a case study?
This is a job for the creative director.
Okay,
creative director.
What's a case study?
A case study tells the story of one of your customers, so that other potential customers can see themselves in it. In this case, I guess you should say that for all these content types, there's no academy of content type. So there are certainly more academic ones and there are more story built ones. But the idea is that you're going to tell how your product or service was instrumental in somebody else being successful.
So you'd say a case study is more of a story type piece of content than an academic piece of content?
Absolutely. When I interview somebody to build a case study, I always tell them that we're going to tell a fairy tale. It's going to start with a problem. We're going to have a resolution, and then we're going to have an outcome.
That sounds lovely. Are there usually evil witches in case studies or children that are about to get eaten?
All the good ones have an evil witch or a darling child in peril or a combination of those two.
And the case study is sort of about how the company that we're writing the case study for is the huntsman coming to the rescue of the children. Evil witch is the problem.
No. They're more like Simon Pegg in Mission Impossible. They're the helper. You see that they're just helping Tom Cruise while he's out doing all the amazing stuff. And so the hero of the case study is the end client.
Correct.
Okay, that makes sense. So there is a fairy tale, but really what we're creating is a sort of fairy tale where the marketing target is reading the case study and seeing themselves like, I could be the hero of this fairy tale.
Correct.
Oh, interesting. So then what kind of audience is a case study usually targeting? Like, it's a marketing piece. Is it usually available on the website?
Yeah. I mean, they will share them. They're obviously going to post on the website using the resources section is what I'm seeing mostly these days. Promote them on social media, email blast them. You know, we have clients that have done that. I mean, but yes, on the website.
Who does a case study usually target?
From our experience, or maybe Joel has some additional insight, but it's not usually a C-suite type individual. It's going to be that department head that's facing a problem. Maybe you're the compliance officer or you're in charge of a production line someplace and you're seeing how somebody in your role faced a challenge and it's similar to your challenge. And then they used this amazing technology and overcame that challenge. And you can too, that kind of thing. So it's going to be a director manager level. That's my opinion anyway. Joel, what else would be the...
Again, there's no hard and fast rule. And we certainly write C-suite ones that have much more of a financial measure to their success. But I think you're right that in order to make a compelling story, you need compelling details. And those compelling details are on the factory floor or at a more detailed ground level. They're generally middle of funnel for people who think about the top of funnel, bottom of funnel, middle funnel, where people are looking for a solution for a problem. One of the great things about these, when you're thinking about creating them, is that if you have a particular sales target, a particular vertical you're working for, working towards, building out towards, or a particular business type, or even a persona, you can write a case study that's very specifically for that person or business or vertical very easily.
Okay. I want to dive in a little bit deeper into that, because, you know, we've talked in the past about sort of the difference between marketing and sales. And I believe you kind of used both of them when you were making that description. So you said that it was sort of like the middle of the funnel. Is that sort of like the marketing funnel or the sales funnel?
Marketing funnel in this case. Thank you for asking. That's an important clarification.
Yeah, yeah. And but then you also talked about particular sales targets. So can case studies be used by sales teams to target specific customers that they're going after, or potential clients that they're going
Absolutely.
After?
Absolutely. I mean, they can be a tool for, you know, the sales funnel as well. You know, perhaps you've got a handful of prospects in your funnel somewhere, and they're a little hesitant, or they've got an obstacle they can't overcome. You can go, hey, look, we just published this case study, and I think that case study reflects your situation, and, you know, please read it, because it can really show you a proof point for how we can help you.
So let's talk about how approachable a case study is for somebody who's reading it. Like, what format do they usually come in? How big are they? Like, how much detail does a case study usually contain?
The ones that we think are most useful are the ones that are read. And so those are going to be 1,000 words, 1,200 words. And we like to make them as visually pleasing and easily scanned as possible. In this way, if somebody's going to be putting them on their website, that's great, provided their website is laid out in a way where you can do visually engaging call-outs, graphics, et cetera, onto the page. But PDF publication of them obviously enables things like attaching to a sales email, and we can also have a lot more control over how they look in all formats. Of course, if you do it on the web, you got to figure out how to make it catchy on the mobile, et cetera.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to clarify a little bit. When you're talking about word count, like you said, 1,000 to 1,200 words. So that's like 4 or 5 pages.
Yeah. And like everything, they've gotten longer. But you know, there's no hard and fast rule for either length or format. I mean, and this is 10, 12 years ago, when we first started out, perhaps by default, or perhaps because that's what people were wanting it back then, case studies were usually about 750 words. They were about 150 words to state the problem, you know, another 250 or so to deal with the challenges and, you know, to the overcoming that problem. And then, you know, act 3, third section is, you know, our client rides in and helps out and becomes the helper and the problem gets solved. But, you know, we've seen and we've created case studies that are glorified lists of bullet points. It's just, hey, and they're trying to get somebody's attention who maybe doesn't even have time to read 1,000 words or 1,200 words. You're somebody you know, who needs a visual representation of an issue and how our client can help them. And so it's perhaps a big problem statement followed by some bullets to identify, you know, to empathetic bullets to say, hey, look, this is the challenge of this person or this company. It reflects on you. And then very quickly and very high level play out the solution. So, and that could be 300 words. You know, I think a long time ago, we referred to those as micro case studies. These days, I don't see us really differentiating. We just call it a case study, and then we let the client kind of guide us on what they want for form factor.
Yeah. And form factor, I think, is a place where you can be very targeted towards, once again, what your web process product is and what your website is and what your audience is going to like. We've done some really cool ones where we do a short interview video with some snazzy animations in it, et cetera. So that would be, you know, maybe 90 seconds and then 200-300 words underneath it. And you can picture those tiled on a website and people can find the case study that most fits the question that they have, and they can absorb it very quickly in a very pleasing manner. It's just about getting that story into the right person.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. So you're sort of talking about like opening up the format of the case study to include video and things like that, just because the purpose of the case study is to tell that story.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about how a case study gets created. In particular, when a writer is writing a case study, what resources do they need? Who do they need to talk to?
I find this to be one of the most artful processes that we have developed because it involves our client's client and how we're going to be able to engage with somebody to move the project along. We got to get done, and also to get those people to say yes, to have their story in there. People don't like to do anonymized case studies. We do them, of course, but you know, saying a major financial firm is not nearly as good as saying the name of that major financial firm when you're telling the case study. Having a named person with a having a named person with a title is much more compelling than, you know, the manager, et cetera.
Right.
So our process is built around making those people enthusiastic and to trust us that we're going to do a good job for them. We also have to serve our own clients' needs, of course. And so for those clients, we, you know, need to communicate what we're doing all the time, et cetera. So it's a multi-touch situation. One of the kind of recommendations I have in there, I have two recommendations. Have the client send an intro so that we can operate scheduling the meeting and having the interview. Make sure that interview is very enthusiastic and fun. I'm very good at that. And then make sure that our client has approval before we send it to the subject for approval. We just find that that's slightly more efficient than having everybody talk about it at the same time.
So do you feel like when we make a case study, then we only talk to our client's client and there's nobody in the direct client's organization that we need to talk to?
No, I didn't go through the entire process. We definitely want to have an initial conversation with our client to clarify what they want to get out of it, like what the story is. It's really great to have somebody from sales or implementation who feels really good about what they did tell us what what they want us to discover, air quoted there, in the story.
All right, cool. That makes a lot of sense. So then what does the client usually need to have ready for us, the writers?
So I think our client, you know, the thing that makes for a successful case study that performs well and does, you know, achieves its intended purpose begins with one of their client's success stories. You know, you have to have that. And we find that the case studies that are the most successful are the ones where someone at our client has identified a specific person willing to talk about their story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that often it comes out of that end client wanting to promote themselves as well, because they're getting promotion as well. So this is, you know, the thing that kind of makes this a great asset for production is it benefits both the service provider and the end user. So, you know, it's really some free marketing for that, the person who, or the company that is the subject of the case study. And to make that work, there needs to be alignment between what our client wants to say and what the end user wants to have said. And when you've got that alignment and access to a SME, it is a really great recipe for making a piece of compelling content that will, you know, move someone down the buyer's journey, you know, help move someone down the buyer's journey, and maybe even double as, you know, that piece of sales collateral like we were talking about earlier. These are inexpensive pieces of content to make compared to other types of content that involve a lot more different professional disciplines. You know, this is writer, designer, get approvals, and it's out the door. You know, you can, if you really have a streamlined process, you can get these out the door in 4 to 6 weeks, and that maybe even less.
So that's fast and sounds like a pretty good investment for a marketing team because they get that quick turnaround and they can see results more quickly.
Yep.
All right. So then if a marketing team is getting ready to have some case studies made or wants to get case studies made, what sort of roadblocks or production pitfalls in their own company should they be aware of or should they look for before they approach a content creation team?
The primary roadblock that I have seen a lot of in the last couple, 3 years is a misalignment between what the client wants to project into the marketplace and what the story is for their end user.
Oh.
And that's when you get these anonymized case studies where we did this thing for this outfit, but how we want to frame it doesn't quite match how they want to frame it. So we're going to anonymize them and get our message out there in a less effective way. And you know, there could be a multitude of reasons for that. But to me, that seems where the big roadblock lies in getting subjects willing to have their stories told. And we have done spec case studies, you know, that clients take to their end users to in hopes of getting something published, for example. And that's happened multiple times over the years.
That can be a pleasant surprise. You're completely right. And the amount of times that that's happened for us is surprising. You know, so many times we've had that interview and the thing that our client thought was going to be the subject of the conversation was their favorite feature or their sales target. And the thing that our subject wanted to talk about was how it changed their business. And it was something that was outside of our expectation. We can approach that with grace and be like, well, that's the story. We're going to write that story, you know, and allow the business to be surprised by that. I like it when that happens. I think it makes everybody a little bit more flexible and responsive to what's happening. But it can also be the, hold on, we got to stop and back up, as Carl pointed out.
Well, and I was referring to instances where we don't necessarily have that access to the end user. Mm-hmm. You know, we're trying to craft something out of whole cloth, perhaps without that level of engagement, which is something we do. It's not, you know, clearly we're talking about the ideal here in terms of how we're going to get one out the door in 4 to 6 weeks, but there are other processes that we have been put to use. And sometimes it is, you know, getting someone to give us a SME requires us to put together something fairly detailed for them to see. By SME, I mean subject matter expert at the end user. Putting something together for them to see and go, oh, okay, I see where you guys are headed with this story. Yes, now I am willing to sit down with you and put meat on the bone and make this thing a really compelling piece of content.
So it sounds to me like if a marketing team wants to start developing case studies or wants to write a case study, they need to perhaps inside their company talk to a sales engineer or an integrations expert, and then they should also talk to their own clients and see who would be willing, sort of get a willing client with a good success story to build that kind of case study fairy tale before they come to the market or a content team to say, like, we want to make a case study. Here's what we've got.
Yeah. Engage with the client success team or the account management team or, you know, the retention team. I mean, there's all sorts of different client facing departments, depending upon, you know, what kind of business you're in, where there are probably people in your building, assuming you still work in a building, who can tell you about, hey, this thing happened 3 weeks ago and it was really super awesome. And everybody went, you know, we felt great as a team being able to help out the, you know, the customer, and the customer was really happy with us because, you know, they had this issue and then we resolved it and blah, 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 blah. So, you know, the front line is where there's a lot of great stories that can be mined.
All right, cool. Well, thanks. I think that's given me a really good idea of what content, of what a case study is, and I hope our listener also understands. Does a case study sound like exactly what your marketing team needs? If so, reach out to us at lionswaycontent.com.
We hope you enjoyed enduring the Smelly Pirate Content Creation Show brought to you by Lion's Way. I'd like to thank our producer, Eric Arneson, for making us all sound smarter in post. Please remember to tip your server and subscribe to this podcast on the platform of your choice. And be sure to visit lionswaycontent.com for all of your B2B marketing content needs. Yeah.